Bibles, please, for our second reading to 2 Chronicles chapter 32. Second Chronicles chapter 32 and verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. After these things and the establishment thereof, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came and entered into Judah and encamped against the fenced cities and thought to win them for himself. And when Hezekiah saw that Sennacherib was come and that he was purposed to fight against Jerusalem, he took counsel with his princes and his mighty men to stop the waters of the fountains which were without the city, and they did help him. So there was gathered much people together who stopped all the fountains and the brook that ran through the midst of the land, saying, "Why should the kings of Assyria come and find much water?" Also he strengthened himself and built up all the wall that was broken, and raised it up to the towers, raised it up to the towers and another wall without, and repaired Milo in the city of David, and made darts and shields in abundance. And he set captains of war over the people and gathered them together to him in the street of the gate of the city, and spake comfortably to them, saying, "Be strong and courageous, be not afraid nor dismayed for the king of Assyria, nor for all the multitude that is with him, for there be more with us than with him. With him is an arm of flesh, but with us is the Lord our God to help us and to fight our battles." And the people rested themselves upon the words of Hezekiah, king of Judah. After this did Sennacherib, king of Assyria, send his servants to Jerusalem, but he himself laid siege against Lachish and all his power with him. Unto Hezekiah, king of Judah, and unto all Judah that were at Jerusalem, saying, "Thus saith Sennacherib, king of Assyria, whereon do ye trust that ye abide in the siege in Jerusalem? Doth not Hezekiah persuade you to give over yourselves to die by famine and by thirst, saying, 'The Lord our God shall deliver us out of the hand of the king of Assyria'? Hath not the same Hezekiah taken away his high places and his altars, and commanded Judah and Jerusalem, saying, 'Ye shall worship before one altar and burn incense upon it'? Know ye not what I and my fathers have done to all the people of other lands? Were the gods of the nations of those lands anyways able to deliver their lands out of mine hand? Who was there among all the gods of those nations that my fathers utterly destroyed that could deliver his people out of mine hand, that your God should be able to deliver you out of mine hand? Now, therefore, let not Hezekiah deceive you, nor persuade you on this manner, neither yet believe him, for no god of any nation or kingdom was able to deliver his people out of mine hand and out of the hand of my fathers. How much less shall your God deliver you out of mine hand?" And his servants spake yet more against the Lord God and against his servant Hezekiah. He wrote also letters to rail on the Lord God of Israel and to speak against him, saying, "As the gods of the nations of other lands have not delivered their people out of mine hand, so shall not the God of Hezekiah deliver his people out of my hand." Then they cried with a loud voice in the Jews' speech unto the people of Jerusalem that were on the wall, to affright them and to trouble them, that they might take the city. And they spake against the God of Jerusalem as against the gods of the people of the earth, which were the work of the hands of man. And for this cause Hezekiah the king and the prophet Isaiah the son of Amoz prayed and cried to heaven. And the Lord sent an angel which cut off all the mighty men of valor and the leaders and the captains in the camp of the king of Assyria. So he returned with shame of face to his own land. And when he was come into the house of his God, they that came forth of his own bowels slew him there with the sword. Thus the Lord saved Hezekiah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem from the hand of Sennacherib, the king of Assyria, and from the hand of all other, and guided them on every side. And many brought gifts unto the Lord to Jerusalem and presents to Hezekiah, king of Judah, so that he was magnified in the sight of all nations from thenceforth. In those days, Hezekiah was sick to the death, and prayed unto the Lord, and he spake unto him, and he gave him a sign. But Hezekiah rendered not again according to the benefit done unto him, for his heart was lifted up. Therefore, there was wrath upon him and upon Judah and Jerusalem. Notwithstanding, Hezekiah humbled himself for the pride of his heart, both he and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, so that the wrath of the Lord came not upon them in the days of Hezekiah. And Hezekiah had exceeding much riches and honor, and he made himself treasuries for silver and for gold and for precious stones and for spices and for shields and for all manner of pleasant jewels, storehouses also for the increase of corn and wine and oil, and stalls for all manner of beasts and coats of flocks. Moreover, he provided him cities and possessions of flocks and herds in abundance, for God hath given him substance very much. The same Hezekiah also stopped up the upper water courses, or stopped the upper water course of Gihon, and brought it straight down to the west side of the city of David. And Hezekiah prospered in all his works. Howbeit, in the business of the ambassadors of the princes of Babylon, who sent unto him to inquire of the wonder that was done in the land, God left him to try him, that he might know all that was in his heart. Now the rest of the acts of Hezekiah and his goodness, behold, they are written in the vision of Isaiah the prophet, the son of Amoz, and in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel. And Hezekiah slept with his fathers, and they buried him in the chiefest of the sepulchres of the sons of David. And all Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem did him honor at his death. And Manasseh his son reigned in his stead. May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. All right, so verses 1 through 8 is the first section. I'd like to maybe, again, make a little bit of a different understanding, a different use, perhaps, of how these passages are typically used. We would be inclined to think, because we think self-righteously, because we think in terms of quid pro quo, that because they've just had a great reformation, because they've reestablished the Passover, because they've called upon the Lord, because they've taken down the high places and ceased worshiping there, because they have laid up stock in store for the Levites so that they might continue their ministry, because the priests have now gotten themselves on board and are worshiping as they should and leading those services as they ought, you would think then, or we would be minded to think, surely this is a great nation, the Lord's not going to afflict them. As soon as they're done with all of those reforms and all of those establishments, the Lord stirs up the king of Assyria. And he attacks Judah and he attacks Jerusalem. And he sends the nameless guy here, Rabshakeh, to harass and to discourage the people of God from obedience. In fact, he even uses those reforms as a way to imply that God is angry with Judah and with Jerusalem, because you've taken away so many more opportunities for him to be worshipped in those altars that you've taken down. This is a very carnal way of thinking. It is indeed at this time that Judah and Jerusalem is most prepared for an attack. All that has taken place up to this point has gotten them ready for this trial. The Lord prepared them for the trial in the Reformation that was prosecuted under King Hezekiah. And it cannot be any other way. It is not, oh, look at this Reformation. The Lord certainly did them a bad turn after that. He didn't protect them. Well, actually, he did protect them. But he did bring them under affliction and trial, didn't he? And he did so because they were, at their point in their spiritual career, most equipped. And so I see this as the great kindness of the Lord. He prosecutes a reformation, an iconoclasm, a provision for the maintenance of that reformation so that it's not just a one-off, like we said earlier today. And then it is only at that point, after the people have been encouraged by that reformation, does he bring the affliction. So Let's remember that. Let's remember that in the course of our lives, it is perhaps after great spiritual victory that the Lord brings some of the most afflicting times, because it is at those times that we are best equipped to handle affliction. Okay? I mean, what do you think? We could conjecture all day. I don't want to do that, but I do want to just maybe do a little experiment with you for a moment. Where would they have been had the Assyrians come before the Reformation? What would that have looked like? We see Rabshakeh would have found a people in spiritual disarray, without the inward strength of character and reliance upon the Lord that they needed. But they had it in that day, and that was a direct result of that Reformation and iconoclasm and the ongoing provision that they had put up. So, perspective, right? Perspective, perspective, perspective. How are you going to look at something? Well, in this case, we look at it as that the Lord prepared them for this such a time. Now, notice that their preparation is not only spiritual. Hezekiah is, well, he's just one of those complete kings. He's got all the tools, right? He's not only concerned religiously for his people, but he's concerned civilly for his people. And so he hears the announcement. He hears the bard, if you will, of Sennacherib and his invasion into Judah and his movement toward Jerusalem. And so what does he do? He repairs the wall. He lays up store in weaponry. He puts another wall up in front. He raises them up to the towers. He stations people on the wall. He furnishes them with spears and shields. In other words, Hezekiah is one of these guys. He understands what he's supposed to do as a magistrate in the religious side of his duty and in the civil side of his duty. And so he builds all of these things up and prepares. And don't you just see that preparation as simply in keeping already with the spiritual preparation that they had undertaken under Hezekiah already, right? So they got the spears and the shields and all of the things that they need to use means to repel any supposed invasion. Well, notice that the invasion doesn't exactly come as they thought it might. And let's remember this, that sometimes the assault of our enemy is not what we expect. This is not an assault. This is not a frontal assault. This is an assault of discouragement. Let's think about that a moment. Isn't it often that the enemy of your souls comes to you and he seeks to discourage you rather than simply to overpower you? If he discourages you enough, you'll overpower yourself, right? And so that's what's happening here. There are lies told. There's the twisting of facts. There's deception involved. And all of it has to do with the proud boast of Rabshakeh and Sennacherib against the God of heaven. Well, Hezekiah is too wise to let that affect him. And so he lays out his problem before the Lord. You remember from the account in the prophet Isaiah, chapters 37 and 8, I guess it is, you'll have that letter that Rabshakeh has carried, and what does he do? Well, it says that here we learn an added detail that he and Isaiah went together before the Lord and just spread that letter out before the Lord. And they prayed and asked the Lord for help. And what does it say happened? Well, in the account in Isaiah and in the account here, although that may be a little more detailed here, we find out that the Assyrian army, many of them didn't get out of bed the next day. They were dead in their tents. The Lord slew them by night. He sent his destroying angel through the camp of the Assyrians and cut them down. It says here that their captains and their leaders and their mighty men were all cut down. Okay? So their army was essentially denuded. The Lord took all of their power away and they went back. And so Sennacherib went back and he was slain by his own offspring in the house of his God. Well, what do we take from that? We take from that that you don't raise your fist against the God of heaven. We must not ever raise our fist against the God of heaven. We must understand that it is He who instructs us and leads us and guides us and provides for us, not to raise our hand against Him. Notice that the Rabshakeh and the Sennacherib that rose up against and cursed the God of heaven, well, that the very breath that they had, in that breath that they used to curse God, was a breath given them by God. We must remember those things. And that outward appearances may teach us that, well, this religion's in the ascendancy, or that religion's in the ascendancy, or, you know, this particular sect of Christians, or that sect of Christians, and so on. We must remember to order our worship of this true God according to His word at all times, no matter whom it appears to be in the ascendancy. Because to Rabshakeh and Sennacherib, they could not imagine Nisroch losing a battle, right? Nisroch is the name of their god. They could not imagine him losing a battle. And yet, notice that it was indeed the angel of the Lord that went through the camp of the Assyrians and slew all their mighty men and captains. Okay. So then after that, verses 24 and following, we have Hezekiah sick unto death, and he prays to the Lord, and the Lord gives him, I guess it was 15 more years, right? Just all of a sudden that number left my head. I think it's 15 years. The Lord gave him 15 more years. Well, that's an amazing thing, isn't it? I mean, that doesn't happen very often. That's pretty extraordinary. And yet we note that Hezekiah did not really make a wonderful use of those 15 years, did he? So there were all kinds of people coming to see what had happened. They had heard that the mighty Assyrians, the guys who leave heads on pikes outside of cities, that they were sent packing from Jerusalem. What was it about this special city that caused the Assyrians to run? Let's go see. And so many came to see Hezekiah, and frankly, it seems that Hezekiah started believing his own press. And so finally, there was an embassage from Babylon. And we don't have all the details here. We have more detail in Isaiah's prophecy. And they come to pay homage to Hezekiah because of his great martial prowess. Because you're the guy, you're the only guy that ever turned back the Assyrians. And so Hezekiah says, oh, you like that? Well, let me show you this. You like that? Well, let me show you this. You like that? Well, let me show you this. And so, as it were, he opens the royal kimono and shows them all of the riches of Jerusalem. They see not just the stuff he has in his palace, but they see the gold and the silver and the brass and all of the utensils of the house of God. And Hezekiah begins to boast upon those things. He's not humbled like he ought to be. And so, when they leave Isaiah, this is the account in the prophecy of Isaiah. Isaiah comes to him and he says, who are those men that came? And he says, well, they were a very important set of men, wise men, great men from Babylon. Really? What did you show them? Hezekiah says, everything. I showed them everything. And Isaiah, the wise old prophet that he is, he says, you know, they'll be back. They'll be back. And of course, what? We're looking at maybe 100 years later, 120 years later, they come back. They come back in the person of Nebuchadnezzar. Three waves of captivity and then finally the fall of Jerusalem. And beyond that, then let me put it this way. It was a destruction from which Jerusalem never really recovered. They never had an Ark of the Covenant again after that in the Holy of Holies. Everything was taken away. All of those original things that were built according to the pattern revealed by David and given to Solomon. All of those things were gone. And so what they had after that then was the things that they made up from thenceforward. They never quite recovered from the fall of Babylon. And it was not all Hezekiah's fault. We don't want to blame all of that upon him. It was because the children of Israel generally had turned away from the Lord. And so he stirred up the armies of the Chaldeans. All right, well, there's a lot more that could be said in that chapter, but that gives us a good overview. Let's stand.